I got inspired by Vic Oladipo. I also texted my trainer. Here is his response. I told you 4 years ago that you were done 4 years ago. Your game has been in decline since Havlicek stole the ball from you. Your full court sprints are timed with a calendar. That being said, if you wire me 561 Bitcoin, $5 million US, we can start tomorrow. Aggressive.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. I'm the host one day a week of the Locked On NBA Podcast and you can find me as always on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. There is one game on the slate for Wednesday in the NBA, so we're going to be going back and looking back at the 2017 NBA Draft. Part 1 and Part 2 of that draft are in the book, so that's the first 8 picks down. We're going to be doing picks 9 through 12 in today's show. So that's Dennis Smith Jr., Zachy Collins, Malik Monk, and Lukey Kennard of the Detroit Pistons. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start in Dallas, where Dennis Smith Jr. was selected with the 9th pick in the draft. Now, as you'll be well aware, it depends how long you'll be listening to this podcast, I guess, but I was massively into Dennis Smith Jr. in the draft last year. He was my 3rd overall player in that draft class. Yeah, I might drop him a spot or two now, but I still think getting him at 9 was a significant steal. I would have had him above Ntilikina and De'Aaron Fox, 2 point guards who were drafted ahead of him in the actual draft. And let's have a look at how his rookie season actually went down. He played 69 games.
Giggity!
30 minutes a game, 15.2 points, 1.5 threes, 3.8 rebounds, 5.2 assists, a steal, and like so many rookies, shot poorly. 39.5% from the field, 69% from the free throw line, and just 31% from three. Another rookie with a sub-500 true shooting percentage. He's came in at 47%, but he had a fairly large usage of 29%. So, we saw Smith play almost those 30 minutes per game, but I think more indicative is over the last 3 months of the year, he bumped it up to 31 minutes per game and averaged 16, 3.5, and 6. Still didn't shoot the ball all that well, but still was able to get that playing time up. And I see him pushing to 33, 34 minutes per game next season. He ended the year as the 144th ranked player in fantasy for the season. If we have a look at these graphs of how it all pans out. You can see they started off quite poorly with some really, really subpar percentages, but then basically hovered around that same number, around between 150 or 140 and 170 for the majority of the season. I thought he'd take a bigger spike in the second half of the year. In punt field goal percentage situations, obviously he did rise up there, but he's still, because of both of those poor percentages, it's a real negative, especially in rotisserie leagues and in the head-to-head leagues if you're not punting those areas. If we have a look at his 2-week rolling average, you can see significant variation in how his performance goes. Through middle of November, he had a big stretch where he was inside the top 50 and then dropped back to outside the top 200 for a couple of months, and then a stretch between basically all of January where he was a top 120 player, also pushing into the top 50 in that stretch. But more importantly, I think, is when they did start to give him more of those minutes towards the end of the year, when so many rookies start to get things figured out a little bit more. From March onwards, he was fairly consistently, aiming higher, moving forward, and being a top 100, top 80, top 70 sort of a player. So they're the sort of things that not necessarily we should be expecting from the get-go next year, but if they do happen, it would be far from a surprise to see that actually go down for Den Smith. In fact, over his last 15 games, he shot 42% from the field and 71% from the line and 34% from three. Now, they're not great numbers, clearly, but they're an improvement over the season numbers. He was about a 70, 72, 73% free throw shooter in college, so it's not like he's an elite free throw shooter, but at 1 to 2% improvement in that area each season could be expected. And I see him as being like a Dennis Schroeder guy in terms of field goal and 3-point percentage type of guys. It is going to hurt you in those areas, but he is a better player than Schroeder. He can be really comfortably within the next 2 to 3 years a 20-point per game scorer. Over those last 15 games, he did average 17.5. So they're obviously, you know, very impressive numbers. He needs to get his three-pointers up. I only hit 1.5 a game on those limited percentages, but there's no reason he can't be a 2 threes per game guy, a 1.2 to 1.3 steals, a 4.5 to 5 rebound guy, and a 6 to 7 assist game. This is probably ceiling for him, but 25 and 7 with 2 threes and 1.2 steals is obviously really, really high caliber fantasy production and real life production. So that's where I see him. I think he has top 20 upside. I don't think he's going to get that next season. I think that he will be a fairly comfortable top 100 guy. And I would be drafting him as such, and I'd be valuing him as a comfortable top 50 asset in dynasty leagues without too much hesitation. I think, with Dennis Smith. Had his struggles, clearly had his issues with Carlisle, which is always going to be a problem with rookie point guards, but he's not a rookie anymore. Yeah, he should see those minutes push up into next season and really start to become a quite valuable player for Dallas and for fantasy owners. Now, his advanced stats, they don't look sensational. Negative win shares, below average PR, sub 500 true shooting. But I like the fact that as a rookie and a poor rookie defensively, the defensive box score plus minus of negative 0.7. Now, that doesn't say everything quite clearly, but it is a decent start there. You look at his on-off numbers at negative 9.4, and that's to be expected. Very few rookies are helping their teams, especially when you've got such a trusted and well-established and honestly excellent veteran coming on behind you in JJ Barea. Those on-off numbers were going to be really, yeah, they're always going to be negative. And in fact, if they had to come out positive, I would have been absolutely floored to have seen Dennis Smith provide positive on-off numbers. Now, he did play alongside Barea at times, but the majority of the time he was coming off and Barea coming in to replace him. So that's part of that reason why that on-off number is so poor there, because of the player coming in behind him. And again, that's something that you should be expecting in that sort of a situation. Really, really poor finishing in pretty much every area of the floor. 28% on his mid-ranges, according to Clean the Grass. The glass. 57% finishing at the rim, 32 on his threes. You know, some really poor numbers there. Now, he did get to the rim quite a bit, which is encouraging, and he should be able to become better there. We know how explosive he is. We know that he should be able to finish there. And I imagine that that number in particular is going to be a key part of what he does for his overall field goal percentage. I guess also somewhat encouraging is the fact that in terms of mid-range shots, he was in the 39th percentile for a combo guard. So that means he's not just settling for those mid-range shots. He is attacking. He is getting to the rim. And when that finishing improves, it's not necessarily a shot selection thing. It's a rookie inexperienced thing that's not allowing those shots to get in. So that does give me a level of encouragement there. I do also think that his steal rate will be able to improve as his career goes on, especially in the next couple of seasons. So we'll see how all that goes for Dennis Smith. As I said, I am a big fan of what he can do next year and in the coming future as well. Hopefully he can dispel those nagging lower body injuries, the knee problem he had obviously in college, the ankle issues he went through this year. But I think we're going to see a fairly significant role from Smith next season. 30% usage season is not out of the question. You know, 33 minutes per night is not out of the question. The Mavericks are getting themselves a high draft pick. I don't imagine them getting a point guard in free agency, and there's going to be no point guard that they're getting in the draft in that range who's going to be coming in and doing anything to take away minutes from Smith. So I think that his role is very secure for the immediate future, and then who knows what happens in 5 to 6 years. But I am pretty confident in Smith being a positive and winning player for fantasy teams over the next 3 to 4 seasons, which is always what you want when you spend a high pick on a guy in a dynasty setting, which I did with Dennis Smith in multiple leagues last season. Let's go on to a guy whose season wasn't quite as clear-cut as what Dennis Smith's was in Dallas, and that's Zach Collins in Portland. This was a situation where Portland traded up to get this pick from Sacramento so they could get Zach Collins. Obviously, plenty of other players on the board, and given their big man situation, you probably thought they would have gone for one of the wings that were around, whether it was Kennard or Mitchell or Monk or one of those guys. It was a curious selection, but I am a decent fan of what Zach Collins can bring as a player. We didn't get to see it at most of the season. There was, you know, he did struggle at times when he was playing and only played in 70 games and 16 minutes per game. But I was impressed with what he did down towards the end of the season, especially in the playoffs. Showed a few flashes there. For the year, as I said, 16 minutes per game. So he only played 66 games, four playoff games. He played 4.5 points, 3.3 rebounds, half a three, half a block, and 0.3 steals. And again, subpar shooting, 40% from the field, 64% from the line, and just 31% from three, for an identical true shooting to Dennis Smith of 47.3 points. His games in the playoffs, they were way more encouraging, I thought, especially games 1 and 2 against the Pelicans, where he had 8 and 12 points, 2 and 5 rebounds, had some defensive numbers happening there as well. And that's one of the things that really did appeal to me for Zach Collins. It was his ability to not only hit threes, but finish at a decently high rate and get you a lot of blocks and be fairly decent in terms of his steal rate. We saw, you know, flashes of that through the season, a couple of nice double-digit scoring games. He's not the steals and blocks monster that, say, John Isaac is in Orlando, and not going to be that level of player. But Portland's got interesting decisions they need to make. With the bundling out in the playoffs by the Pelicans, with Yusuf Nurkic's flakiness, with his inconsistency, and with the fact that he's a restricted free agent and is going to think he's worth a lot more money than he probably is, or that Portland is willing to pay him, there is a legitimate chance, not necessarily a guaranteed chance, but a legitimate chance that Collins is pushed into a 24 to 25 minute role per game next season, perhaps as a starting center, perhaps Ed Davis starting and him being the primary backup. There's going to be some interesting things depending on that Nurkic role. And even if Nurkic comes back, by year three of Collins' career, I would have to imagine that he would be starting, or at least in that discussion to be starting ahead of Nurkic, even if Nurkic is still around. So that will be something for us to pay some attention to. If we have a look at the rolling averages for Zach Collins, it doesn't give us a great indication of where he is. He had that nice little peak around the end of January where he was pushing inside the top 200 and top 150. And then you can see from about the middle of December onwards, his form improved. Like, he started the season shaky, had minutes taken from him by Caleb Swanigan, which is clearly not going to be the case as we move forward. And then he sort of stabilized around this 220 to 200 sort of mark in terms of his ranking the majority of that time. So that gives us a little bit of encouragement. His per 36 numbers, they're not fantastic. 10 and 7.5, over a three and over a block, with 0.6 steals and 2 assists. And again, it's those percentages that do really need to improve. But the thing that's a little bit discouraging is that they didn't improve over the course of the season. The last 2 months, 28% from three, 40% from the field. The free throws, they went to 78%. So that's a positive sign, but yeah, still had his struggles as the season went on, which again is I guess a level of cause for concern. But I still do think that Collins could be pushing himself into a role. Now, will he ever be a 30 minute per game guy? I reckon that's probably a stretch. That's nearly every big man, unless you're Karl Anthony Towns or Joel Embiid or Kristaps Porzingis. How many big men are going to be 30, 33 minute per night players a lot of this time? And the answer is not very many of them. So Collins, I think, will be one of those guys who pushes to mid-20s, maybe low-20s next season, and then maybe goes to 28 or 27 or something along those lines. A putrid PER of 7.5, poor true shooting, as I've already mentioned, but a positive defensive box score plus minus, which is a good start. The team was only negative 0.7 in terms of on-off, so that's a massive positive as a rookie as well. Especially when you've got an established player like Nurkic and Ed Davis there around as well. That is good, yeah, good to see. Actually, his plus minus for the season was plus 2.4. So that's always a good sign there for him as well. So there are enough things in the advanced numbers and from watching him play and looking at what he did in college and all that sort of stuff that gives you a level of hope. Now, he's a guy who never really played big minutes in college either. I think he's only started one season out of his past five, and that's going back through high school and college as well. So there is still some extrapolation-based things that could be a concern with Zach Collins. But yeah, you know, I do think that he can become a decent starter, but again, not pushing to that 30 minutes necessarily, but he needs 24, 25 minutes a night to potentially be a guy that's a top 120 player in the next 3 to 4 seasons. That's sort of how I see how I see Collins. He does have the ability to hit the three. It obviously wasn't good this year, but he can do that. He took a lot of threes. He was in the 85th percentile in terms of taking corner threes and hit those at 41%. So that's a real positive. His other threes were the real letdown there, hitting only 25% of his non-corner threes. He's finishing at the rim. Needs a ton of work. He's still very slim. He's still got a lot of strength stuff to work on. Only 59% at the rim, which for a perimeter big, yeah, it's not horrible. It's pretty horrible, but it's not also the worst thing in the world. But 15th percentile as a big man, according to Clean in the Glass, in terms of finishing at the rim. So that is something that is important for him to improve on, no doubt. He also, his assist percentage wasn't great, but it also wasn't terrible. The other thing I found interesting as well is that, he was only in the 79th percentile in terms of, being assisted on his three-point makes. Now, it's at 97%, but still, that means there's more people, 21% of people who are getting more of their threes off assists, meaning there was a smidgen of self-creation there for Zach Collins. Nothing massive, nothing major or anything along those lines, but interesting that he was able to create just a little bit of some of those shots from three, and that will bode well for him. But I do like the fact that he took those corner threes, hit them well, and that's giving him somewhere to go from there. So let's hope that for him, he can get there. Still does need to work on those defensive numbers, the blocks and steals. I believe they will come. He's got a history of showing decent block rates in college and high school, so I do think that that's something that's going to come. But would I rate him as a surefire top 100 player in the next 4 years? No. Would I rate him as a surefire top 150 guy? Probably. But I think he's got a range of outcomes that could be for a guy that becomes a player that plays only 15 minutes a night seems unlikely to a guy that plays 27 a night. More likely. He's already ahead of Myers Leonard, Swanigan, and could potentially jump ahead of Davis and Nurkic next season. So a lot to get excited about. I didn't love the pick at the time. Wasn't sure. I know I like Collins quite a bit, but he did show enough flashes, especially after a poor performance at the start of the year and in summer league, to go, this guy can hang. This guy can be a starter in certain situations. He just needs to bring a little bit more, and development will come, and it might take 3 years, but he is someone to watch as we move forward into this, into his career and into the career of the rest of the players from this 2017 draft. Next up, we head to Charlotte to look at a player who was wildly disappointing for the majority of this season, and that is Malik Monk of the Charlotte Hornets. He was a guy that many people thought at some point could be a number three pick in this draft or a top three pick. That clearly didn't happen. It clearly didn't work out that it should have happened, and he slid down the draft boards, and based on how he played for majority of the season, you would say that was correct. But there's a number of factors in play here. Steve Clifford, like many other of these hard-nosed, I'm a hard-ass old-school coach, you're a rookie, therefore you can't play, which, to be honest, is an absolute wild load of shit. It is just absolute nonsense. Gotta make them earn their time. It's bullshit. It's terrible. It's poor, poor coaching. And while I liked Clifford as a coach and I like him as a coach, that sort of mentality is not a successful one. I don't agree with it in any sort of sense at all. If the player's not good, then that's fine. But the fact of not playing them because they're a rookie and that's your reasoning is nonsense. Van Gundy did it with Kennard, who we're going to talk about soon. Clifford did it with Monk, and it's bullshit. It is honestly nonsense. And the other thing that was weird about it is that he didn't even send him down to the G League to allow him to actually get decent playing time. He only played one game in the G League and played like 41 minutes in that game. But stayed up and played 63 games for the big team, played 14 minutes per game. But that's a ton of DMP CDs, especially early on, and basically just tons of junk time performances. Yeah, so many games where he played under 10 minutes per game, including this weird stretch between the 22nd of December through to the 27th of February, which is basically when Michael Carter-Williams got hurt, where he saw double figures in minutes just twice. And sat out about 10 games. Really sort of odd stuff in terms of the management of Malik Monk this year. Averaged 6.7 points, 1.3 triples, 1.1 rebounds, which is horrendous, 1.4 assists, 0.3 steals, and like so many rookies, 36% from the field, 84 from the line is good, but very few attempts, and 34% from three for a true shooting of 48%. But I'm going to ignore a lot of that. Again, it's a confidence thing. It's a development thing. And let's look over those last 2 months of game when he became the primary backup to Kemba Walker because Michael Carter-Williams had a shoulder injury and then started playing more minutes down the stretch. So his last 18 games of the year, he played 19 minutes per game. 12 points with 2.2 triples, 2.3 assists, and 0.5 steals, 40, 95, and 36 for a true shooting of 53 on a usage of 28. That is very impressive for a rookie to have that high usage. And while it's still a below average true shooting, it's such a significant improvement in what he'd done throughout the rest of the year. And in fact, his per 36s over that stretch is 23, 3.5, and 4.5 with over 4.3 triples per 36 minutes. That is obviously an impressive number. And in that time, he was the 183rd ranked fantasy player. For the year, he was 381st because he didn't do very much at all. But as he got more comfortable playing this new position, his assist rate went up, his three-point rate went up, his scoring went up, his efficiency went up, his steal rate went up, his rebound rate went up. Yeah, they're all really, really positive signs for Monk and for a guy who was honestly the most disappointing first-round pick out of every single player, I think, apart from Tyler Lydon. He just looked horrible at times and he was being treated poorly by the way Clifford used him. But by the end of the year, he started to look the goods, and it made you go, well, Steve, yeah, there was a lot of mismanagement going on here, but next season it's going to be interesting. What do they do with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist? Do they slide Nick Batum up to the three, and do they start Malik Monk? Do they run Monk off the bench as the primary backup point guard? That's the bare minimum, I think, for what Malik will do next season. I think he has to be that primary backup getting 18 minutes a night, but then he also has to play with Kemba Walker and get those minutes alongside Kemba. Perhaps at the expense of Kidd-Gilchrist, perhaps at the expense of Jeremy Lamb, who did play very well this season. But Lamb, I think we see he has limitations. He has lots of limitations in terms of his overall upside in his game. But the other thing is there's a new coach coming to Charlotte. How are they going to view Monk? How are they going to view Kidd-Gilchrist? How are they going to view Lamb? There's lots of different things at play here, and it'd be very hard for a new coach to come in and think less of Monk than Clifford did for the first 5 months of this season. Monk and Walker played a total of 200 minutes together this season. That's out of Monk's 856 minutes. So, an okay chunk, but I think it's something that can be worked on and can happen more late in the year. And in those last six games of the season, where he played 25 minutes a game, he averaged 20 points, 3.7 triples, and it didn't come on 55 or 56% three-point shooting. He shot 40% from three. He was a 40% three-point shooter at Kentucky. He was 47% from the field. He averaged 4 assists per game, and those are numbers where you go, shit, all right, he's getting it. We're getting it. We're seeing why people were really interested in what he can do. The fact that he's playing it. Now, one of the things I was down on Monk about in terms of him being a useful fantasy guy heading into the draft was that he did nothing apart from score and hit threes. But they moved him to point guard, and if he's getting you 4.5, 5 assists in 27 to 29 minutes per game, then that's bang. That's another category that you add that. Add on the free throw percentage, which, if he has the ball in his hands more, which we can make an assumption that he could do that, because again, over that last period of time when he was the primary backup point guard, his free throw attempt rate went up. So if he starts getting there and hitting them at 90%, not an outrageous number, hit 95% over the last 27 games of the year. If he's got the ball in his hand more, gets to the line more, gets those assists up, hits those threes, I think there's a lot coming for Monk, and I was really down on him, but the positional change has opened up, I think, a lot for him here. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it all pans out for Malik Monk in the coming years. Now, if you look at his rankings there, there's very little to see. He had that nice little spike at the start of November where he had that big game in Madison Square Garden against the Knicks, and basically he was banished until Michael Kidd-Gilchrist got injured there, which you can see is really the nadir of his overall 8 cat ranking. And then the numbers start to climb, but of course we're basing it on a season's worth of numbers. It's hard to go up when you're the 420th ranked player by the time he's inserted into the backup role, and then his numbers climb up and he becomes the 380th guy. But more telling for what Monk's numbers are like is by looking at his 2 week rolling average, and that's really, really indicative. You can see that he's hovering around those 300 mark, and from mid-November after that big game against the Knicks, he's in that 400 or 350 to 400 range for months and months and months. And then over the last 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season, you see him right up the top there where he is becoming a top 50 player over the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season, a top 100 guy over the last month of the season. And that's the really encouraging thing with Malik Monk. So, you know, looking into post All-Star numbers and treating them all as gospel for what will happen in the following season is not 100% the case. It's never going to be because there are so many other factors. The Hornets started resting all their guys. Kemba's minutes dropped down. You know, Carter Williams was injured. But I think the Carter Williams injury, we don't have to pay too much attention to because Monk will have that role. He'll just be in that next season. I would be astonished if any coach come. If I'm Mitch Kupchak, when I'm interviewing these coaches, the first question should be, are you going to play Carter Williams over Monk? And if the answer is yes, then you shut the door on them or you kick him out the door, foot up the ass and say, see you later, because that's just not going to fly with this team. That's the way I'd be looking at it anyway. But of course, I am not an NBA general manager. Again, another rookie with a sub 500 true shooting, poor win shares number, really, really poor defensive box score plus minus and overall box score plus minus. And his on off was atrocious, a negative 15.4. But of course, yeah, comparing it to Kemba Walker is a, and then Nick Batum, the guys in the positions that he played, and Jeremy Lamb to an extent, is a really hard thing to overcome. He played 59% of his minutes at point guard last season. I think we'll see that number rise to about 65 to 70% next season. That would be my initial guess, depending on how drafts and free agency and all that sort of shit go. But he was excellent to end that season. And over the last 6 games of the year, his lowest points total was 16, and he hit at least 3 triples in all of those games, including 2 games with 4 and 1 game with 5 triples. He blocked 4 shots over those final 6 games. That's where we saw that real spike in that in those rolling averages. So a real improvement. Took a lot of shots from 3 and quite a few pull-up attempts for 3 as well. Only 66% of his 3-pointers were assisted. So that's interesting. Only 38% of his attempts at the rim were assisted, and only 52% of his shots overall assisted. So a ton of self-creation, which is going to be a big part of what he's going to need to do in this new position. 43% on his corner threes, excellent. He took 43% of his shots as corner threes. That's really excellent. Hit 33% of his corner threes. That needs work. He's finishing at the rim at 60%. Pretty good, especially for a rookie. There is room to grow there. And struggled on his mid-range shots, as so many players do. Still probably took a few too many from mid-range, but it wasn't an egregious amount. His apportioning of shots was solid. 85th percentile as a combo guard in terms of amount of attempts taken from three, where 54% of his attempts were taken from three and ended up hitting a decent rate and really improved that down the end. Now, of course, his steal rate was fairly atrocious. His rebounding rate was piss poor. Those things do need to improve for him to ever become an excellent sort of fantasy player. But you know, an improving assist rate, nudging towards 20%, he's got to get to 25, 26 to be considered a realistic point guard or fantasy asset in that area. But I think that it can come. Now, the assist rate stuff, or more importantly, the steal rate stuff is something that does need to improve. His per 36 steal rate was 0.8 per 36. That's horrible. That's really, really piss poor. And that does need some work. But again, it's one of those things that did improve over that second, or that last portion of the season where he was, clearly much, much improved. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see exactly what the Hornets do with Lamb, with Kidd Gilchrist, where they play Batum, and what they do with Carter Williams. But there's a realistic scenario that Monk starts the season in a 22-minute per game role, and we could, honestly, realistically, we could see him in a starting role next, as early as next season. Probably unlikely, and more likely to be happening towards maybe January, depending on how the start of the year goes, but it's not an unrealistic scenario. He could very easily come out and bump his field goal percentage, which was poor. We know that, 36%. If he was a 44% shooter next season and shot 39% from three, I would not be stunned at all. He hit just 39% of his 2-pointers. If that can push anywhere to 46, 47% plus improving his 3-pointers, then we're talking about a guy that's going to have a huge opportunity to score a ton as he did towards the end of the season. Defense is a real concern. Again, so much of the coaching is going to depend here. How much is the coach going to value defense? Which is one of the reasons why Clifford refused to play him. That's going to be an issue. But in terms of moving forward, I have higher hopes, and this is, sounds stupid to say considering how piss poor his season was, but I've got higher hopes for Monk as a fantasy guy now than I did at draft time because of that positional change, allowing him to hopefully draw more free throws, get more assists, which is an extra two fantasy categories to his bow outside of points and threes. And you become a four-category contributor rather than a two-category, and especially when threes are the most common category or easily found category, it does bump your value significantly. So that's the way that I'm currently looking at Malik Monk as we move forward for him in the future. All right, let's go on to the last player we're going to be covering today, a player who is just really, really maligned right across social media. I'm sure that any Detroit Pistons fan will be well aware of that, and that is Luke Kennard. Now, when I put out these questions, you know, which I did with about 2 months left in the season, you know, who was the worst first-round pick? Numerous people said Luke Kennard, and that is blatantly wrong. It is as false as it gets. Now, the reason a lot of people say that is because Donovan Mitchell was pick 13. All right, cool. You could have had Donovan Mitchell. It doesn't make Luke Kennard bad. Kennard was a better player than Zach Collins. Kennard was a better player than Frank Ntilikina. Kennard was a better player than Malik Monk. He was very, 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 very far from being the worst first-round pick. I was impressed by what I saw from Luke Kennard this season. He was ranked 255th for the season in 20 minutes per game, but like Monk, he suffered through a head coach who refuses to play rookies on principle, which is just, again, nonsense. 7.6 points, 1.1 threes, 2.4 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 0.6 steals, and 0.2 blocks, shot 44 from the field, and an astonishing 42% from three as a rookie, 86% from the free throw line. And he got better from three as the season went on. Over the last 2 months of the year, went 42% from the 3-point line, had a true shooting of 56%, right on league average. That is really super impressive. Now, he is a guy that you look at him and you go, white shooter from Duke. Is he JJ Redick? Well, no, he's not. He's nowhere near that. And I'll tell you why. He's not as good of a shooter or 3-point, maybe not shooter. JJ Redick is a fantastic shooter, fantastic at coming off screens, fantastic at off-ball movement, that sort of stuff. Kennard's different. Kennard's a very, very good three-point shooter, but he does other things. Kennard can handle the ball. Kennard can assist. Kennard can rebound. Kennard can actually provide some defense. He can get steals. Now, he can't get to the line all that well, much like Redick, but he does have other areas, other things that can be, I guess, more well-rounded than, say, a JJ Redick can be. He might never be a guy like Redick that hits just as many threes at absurd efficiency like Redick did. I think he had like a season where he was hitting almost three threes a game at 50% overall field goal percentage. I'm not sure that Kennard ever gets to that, but he shot 44% in his rookie year, hitting two threes per 36 minutes and bumped that to over two post All-Star break. That's decently impressive to me. So if we have a look at how his rankings played out through the year, fairly straightforward. We're looking at his rolling 2 week average here. Started off poor because it didn't play very much. Had an opportunity once Avery Bradley and Tobias Harris got traded and in Van Gundy. And this is one of those things that pissed me off, extraordinarily, is that before that trade, Van Gundy said, we're going to be playing Kennard a ton now. We're going to be playing him a lot. Consistent role, 27 minutes per night. Avery Bradley got traded and then Kennard played less, which made no sense to anybody whatsoever. Now, Reggie Bullock had a great season for Detroit, shot incredibly well. I understand that. But I think you had to give more minutes to Kennard. And we saw this down the stretch here in this March. Look at those numbers start to rise as he pushes and had a little stretch there where he was around a top 100 player. Some really, really nice numbers. Had another nice top 150 stretch through the start of January. And I thought, oh, here we go. Things are starting to come together. But no, he was banished back to the bench. And you can see, again, with so many rookies, hashtag rookie wall, which doesn't exist, have a look at how the overall season ranking just continues to climb. It just continues to climb, and he finishes up there. And again, we saw toward the end of the year that he's got a chance, I think, to be a top 150 player next year. Now, of course, it depends what they do at small forward. Do they push Reggie Bullock there? Stan Johnson's not really developing very well. Sorry, Kyle. What do we do with Bullock? You know, is he worthy to start again? Despite, you know, he was excellent, but is he that guy you really want to start there? Will Kennard be able to play, you know, 28 minutes per game, backing up both those positions? What do they do with Jim Ennis? It is going to be very, especially because the Pistons probably won't have a first round pick unless it jumps up into the lottery. They lose that to the Clippers in that Blake Griffin trade. So there's a lot to be encouraged about for Kennard. In fact, over the last 2 months, after the All-Star break, in only 26 minutes per game, he was the 151st ranked player, shooting 86% from the line, 47% from the field, 11 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 2.5 assists. Everybody should really be impressed by those sort of numbers as a rookie. That shooting was absolutely excellent. True shooting, 56. Fantastic. Massively positive win shares, almost at your average of 0.1 win shares per 48. So a little bit below average. But again, as a rookie who barely played, that's impressive. Defensive box score plus minus, negative 0.4. On off, plus 5.6. These are huge, huge ticks for a rookie who is a white guy shooter. He is actually a pretty good defender and I think can be a solid defender and distributor and all-around player. So I actually, it looks stupid now. And you could have easily picked Donovan Mitchell with that pick and it would have been fantastic. I was into Donovan Mitchell. I didn't think he should have necessarily been a top 7 or top 5 or top 3 pick in the draft, but I was into him and you would have heard me speak in the draft process about guys who have high steal rates. You know, in general, if they're good prospects with high steal rates, they will outperform their draft position quite a bit, which is what Mitchell did. But that's not to say anything about, in fact, Kennard played better than I anticipated he would, but he can do other things that we don't necessarily expect just from lazy stereotyping. So that's something to pay attention to. So, you know, positive on off, a positive plus minus for the season of 3.3, which is again, really, really impressive there. For him as well, below average usage stuff again, which is, you know, way more room for him to improve as the season or as his career rolls on. In fact, as a wing, he was 81st percentile in 3-point percentage as a rookie, which is obviously really impressive. Now, he just didn't get to the rim at all. 16% of his shots at the rim is horrible. Did not finish there well at all, but hit 41% on his non-corner threes and only 33% on his corner threes. That shows you, look, those corner threes are nearly always higher. So which one's the fluky one? The 41% from the corner or 33 from the corner? I would say the 33 from the corner is more likely to change and correct itself, meaning we could be seeing a guy that has multiple 40 plus 3-point percentage seasons, which would be really interesting to see how that goes. Still does need work on his rebounding rate, his block rate, his steal rate, but they're not bad. They're not horrible. And you know, you've got a guy who's playing at the two guard, can handle the ball. It's averaging 4.5 rebounds or 5 rebounds post All-Star per 36, along with 3.5 to 4 assists. A steal a game, over 2 threes, good percentages. I think he's going to be a really valuable fantasy player. Now, what happens with him in next season is really up for debate. I would like to see him start alongside Reggie Bullock. I'm not sure that Van Gundy will do that. And we've got news today that they're going to continue with Stan there as the coach for next season. Could very well change, but that's what they're currently looking to do. What you do with Johnson and Ennis. And I just don't think these guys need to be eating into Kennard's playing time really at all. And I don't think that he necessarily will. Again, post All-Star break, 26 minutes per game. That's encouraging. And we saw down the stretch, the last three games should really whet your appetite. Again, it's the last three games of the season, but 32 minutes, 35 minutes, and 31 minutes, which included 18, 20, and 23 points, a combined 10 3-pointers, combined 15 rebounds, and combined 11 assists with 4 steals, and 50% shooting in all of those games. Absolutely excellent stuff. Doesn't mean anything, but it's not that it doesn't mean anything, but it doesn't mean everything. Maybe that's the better way of putting it. But if Luke Kennard was a top 100 player next season, I'd just go, yeah, that's about right. I can totally see that. Again, we're looking at what the position holds. Who's ahead of him? Can he make these jumps forward? And I think he can. I think he held his own, excellent as a shooter, held his own defensively, did some playmaking. And these are all massively positive signs for a guy like Kennard that was, you know, widely derided right across the landscape. A, when he was drafted because he's white. B, when Donovan Mitchell blew up. And C, with Stan Van Gundy not playing him as much as he should have. So I am interested in Donovan Mitchell. I'm very interested in Donovan Mitchell. I'm interested in Luke Kennard. I think he can become a really surprising, multi-categorical contributor. Think of a guy like a Nick Batum, perhaps. A better shooting, less assisting Nick Batum, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's not the greatest comparison, but he is not your typical white guy shooter. I think everyone's got to get that idea out of their heads. He is not Marco Bellinelli. He is not JJ Redick. He has way more things that he can do, or different things that he can do. Not saying he's as good as those guys or will ever become as good as those guys, but I think he's got the potential to provide more to us and be more of a useful fantasy asset in that sense. That's another one of the NBA draft recap shows done. If you are liking the show and you've just found it, make sure you're subscribing on Apple Podcasts. And why don't you go ahead and leave a 5-star rating and a review. And you can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube, where you should be smashing that subscribe button as well. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, LockedOnSports.com, for all your NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball news. And on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. Of course, Basketball Monster still cracking out the DFS playoff projections. That's the word I'm looking for. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dirk Nowitzki.